Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be drilling down into the volatility that we're seeing in markets at the moment. We're going to touch on a number of equities as well as look at the key themes out there. And to do that, we have with us once more, Alan Green. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Good morning, John. How are you doing?
Yes, very well. Very well, thank you. Very busy week out here. How about yourself, Alan? I know you're very close to the markets with what you're doing. How are you finding things?
Yeah, obviously, it is something of a bloodbath at the moment, but I think we're seeing a lot of opportunities emerge. I mean, people are talking about capitulation, and you know, that's where people hold stocks for ages and maybe they chase them down and all the rest of it, and then they get to a point where they think, stuff it, you know, I'll just take the loss on the chin, and they pull out, and then everyone else piles in. So it's we've just got this cocktail at the moment, haven't we? And obviously the budget last week didn't inspire confidence, you know, the spend budget, but I think it's a gamble, but it's a question of whether the bottle's half full or half empty. And I have to say, I think in terms of being popular, in trying to win votes, I think the Truss administration still will win far more votes than Rishi Sunak and his more pragmatic and probably more sensible approach.
Yes, well, I mean, time will tell, and I think it's really down to, you know, how bad this situation gets. You know, you mentioned there a gamble. It was a real gamble from Liz Truss and her new government last week with the mini budget. Now, of course, the immediate reaction to that in markets has been heavy selling of UK assets. We've seen, of course, you know, sharp downsides in the pound. We're seeing the UK 10-year gilt this morning yielding 4.4%, which is getting back in line with the yield of the FTSE 100, which is something we haven't seen for years. You know, we probably have to go back, you know, to probably about a decade ago to see those sorts of levels there. So there's big shifts happening there in markets. Alan, so there's two real questions that I think we need to address today, given what's happened in recent days. Now, first of all, is are we set on a path of economic self-harm here in the UK with what we've just seen in the mini budget and the market reaction? And, you know, obviously looking at the factors there, is it too early to start stepping in to equities at this point? Given the FTSE 100, we're looking at it now, it's about 6,880. Lowest level since last year, I believe. Very sharp declines there. We were quite comfortably trading in the ranges around 7,300, 7,400 for some time. Very sharp movement down. We do get some support coming from a weaker pound in the FTSE 100. I think it's about 70% of the revenues in the FTSE 100 comes from overseas. So when you start to see the pound weaken, that does mean that those earnings are worth more to the companies listed here in London to provide some support there. However, that isn't playing out this time. You know, we saw it after Brexit. We saw a massive rally in the FTSE 100 because the pound was devalued so much. We're not seeing that play out just yet in markets. So that's something that we'll touch on there. So, I mean, let's start off with the first point here, Alan. When we're looking at what Liz Truss has set out, on the face of it, if we take her tax cuts, that's supposed to be good for the economy. However, what, you know, looking into the detail and what the issue has been is that there weren't any economic forecasts attached to that as there usually would be. And that's raised suspicion in the markets and raised concerns that this is going to really put some strains on the UK finances. So, I mean, how do you see this playing out, Alan? I mean, is this a plan that you even think she's going to be able to get in place? And we saw the IMF last night putting out a warning that, you know, this isn't the right time to take such measures and urge them to make some changes in the upcoming budget in November. I mean, do you think that's something that they're going to do? Or are we going to see all the measures that she proposed or The chance to propose last week pushed through.
Well, the whole issue about forecasts, which I think is what sparked the concern, because it looked very much like a knee-jerk reaction to Liz Truss winning the election, and oh, quickly we have to put something together. I said at the start, you know, it's something of a gamble, and of course it is a big gamble because of course. It requires a happy electorate, and you know, people being reassured, feeling reassured that they're not being left alone to cope with huge increases in bills and a huge jump. But there will certainly be interest rate increases, and I'm glad the Bank of England came out and said, "Well, we're not going to call an emergency meeting and increase the interest rate on the spur of the moment." Having said that, there were reports that there were forecasts, in fact, coupled with the budget that Kwasi Kwarteng presented to the House, budgets from the OBR, and of course those budgets have yet to see or those forecasts have yet to see the light of day. So they'll have to be presented. They'll have to be aired at some point. But I think it's just the fact that it did seem to be something of a knee-jerk response that sparked the fall in the pound. And then, of course, you get these sensationalist headlines, city slicker traders crashing our pound and all the rest of it, which is absolute rubbish. They're just trading on an opportunity, which is what traders do in the city. And I, for one, although a lot of people I know are very anti this, I for one, am glad that they haven't capped bankers' bonuses, because we need to bring in the brightest minds in that field. And good investing creates prosperity, creates employment, creates all sorts of opportunities. So I think there's an awful lot in that budget. And I think we're seeing a knee-jerk reaction at the moment, but I think we're starting to see real value. I mentioned capitulation. A lot of people are just coming out of the markets and, you know, walking away from it and taking the loss on the chin, but we are seeing stocks now at record low levels. I know we're going to talk about a couple of those in a minute, John, but I think there are some great opportunities out there in the market, and this is largely down, I think, to people's confidence in UK PLC. You know, it's the UK, a Brexit UK, but obviously still working and trading very closely with its partners, and I think the budget has provided. Despite the economic headwinds, the post-COVID tailwind, if you like, and also, of course, the issues with energy and the crisis in Ukraine, there are all these factors together. But I think the Truss government has put the UK economy into a position where it can do something about it and with confidence trade its way out of the current situation.
Indeed. I mean, the measures on the face of what was announced, you know, should be supportive of the UK economy in the long term. Of course, it makes it a more attractive destination for higher earners, which then has that trickle-down effect across the economy. However, the devil was in the detail, and the detail just wasn't there. And the markets have really taken that, and it's the unintended consequences, not so much what was announced, but it's the consequences of not having that detail attached to it, which caused the issues in markets. And that sort of brings us on to the two stocks that we're going to discuss today that really we're going to look to address with these two companies. The question of, is it too early to start stepping into this market? Because they're two companies that are highly linked to the UK economy. It's going to be Taylor Wimpey and Lloyds that we're going to look at. Now, one of the consequences, as we touched on there, of the announcement was a plunging pound, of course, but also an increase in long-term swaps in markets, which are now predicting that mortgage rates could now go up to around 6% next year. And of course, as you mentioned there, Alan, there's been talk of emergency rate hikes from the Bank of England. Yeah. They haven't done one so far, but you know, if we're looking at market pricing, it looks as though there's going to be a 200 basis point move higher in interest rates before the end of this year. So that's another full 2%. So that's obviously putting waves through the housing market. It's heavily hit Taylor Wimpey, which is the first one we're going to look at now. Trading, I can see here, Alan, at about 83 pence. This is the lowest level since 2013.
Yep.
Significant discount to recent highs. You know, is this a company, if you're a long-term investor, that may be worth a look at this point?
I think it's absolutely worth a look. And I think the one thing is that, you know, we're seeing a lot of the major news wires now coming up with stories about people concerned about their mortgages and their payments and everything else. And we had this crisis back in the 90s, but at that point, the government had control of setting interest rates. And of course, the Bank of England now has that. So we won't, it's very unlikely we'll see that runaway interest rate scenario repeat itself. But of course, that does impact on people's concerns, people who are thinking of buying and of course, borrowing. And a lot of the deals that were on the table from the lenders have been taken off because of the uncertainty. I think once we have more clarity on these forecasts and how it's going to be achieved, then I think we'll see calm and certainty return to the markets, despite of course the backdrop. But I've always taken the view that we are an island, we're a finite territory. These house builders have huge land assets. They have pockets of that. They have land banks that they can build on and choose to build on as and when they need to. They have cost inflation to deal with. But I mean, I'm just going back to Taylor Wimpey, for example. As you say, it's at these all-time lows. But on the back of that, now it pays a dividend of 10.5%. You know, which is pretty well inflation beating in my book. So my view on the housing market is this. I think we do have a national shortage of houses. They will need to continue building houses. The actual margins could be impacted, but I don't think the volume of housing, the volume of housing demand will remain unchanged. And once we have more certainty, then the lenders that have put those deals into the market and then taken them away will then reintroduce deals to attract first-time buyers. And of course, once the first-time buyers are on the ladder, then the housing market starts to function as it should do. But I mean, let's not forget, Taylor Wimpey reported first half revenues of 2.1 billion. It nearly hit the performance that it delivered the previous year. But profits stayed flat at about 425 million. And it expects operating profits for the year to be at the top end of expectations, 873 to 924 million. And that's, of course, driven by selling prices that are expected to be up 4 to 5% higher than last year. Cost inflation on materials for the company is around 9 to 10%. So it's got to balance and, of course, battle that. It raised the interim dividend, but I think looking forward, until we see revised trading statements from the builders, I don't think there'll be too much of a change in the outlook. But what it does mean is that you can snap up a blue chip company like Taylor Wimpey at record multi-year lows. And if the group carries on building at the volume it's building at, then it's likely to at least maintain the dividend for a couple more quarters.
Indeed. I mean, I was correct. I misspoke at the beginning. It's trading at 86p, down 3%, not 80.
Yeah, I'm at 85.4p at the moment.
So, and also, I'll just pick up the point there on the dividend, Alan. I mean, just looking at their policy, you know, they say that they pay out 7.5% of net assets annually. That total 250 million in the last year. Now, given that they've got net cash, looking here at around 640 million, that's not going to put any particular pressure on that cash balance. They continue to pay that. So I think it's just a case of riding it out. I can't see any changes in the next dividend. But if we do see a real disruption in the UK housing market, I mean, I've seen comments recently on Bloomberg from a representative of John Charcoal, one of the UK's leading mortgage brokers, sorry, and they were talking about 10% downsides in house prices. If we see that, you know, that's a correction. It's not a crash. I don't think that will have a major impact on their earnings. Of course, if it goes down further than that, and you know, things get a little bit more messy, that will have to be looked at again. But the dividend, you know, going forward does look attractive at 10%, even if they cut it in half, 5% at this point in time, for the reasons that you spoke there, Alan. I see further volatility in the short term. Yeah. However, for the longer term investors, and I'm talking 3 to 5 years, maybe one to start having a look at there. So moving on now, Alan, Lloyds, another one, highly linked to the UK, well, the health of the UK economy. It's the UK's largest mortgage provider. So of course, all of the news that we're seeing with, as you mentioned, mortgages being withdrawn. I don't actually know whether Lloyds have withdrawn any as yet, or they have, or put them back. I don't know what their situation is. They've, of course, got lots of different brands there. But, you know, the underlying health of the mortgage market is going to impact Lloyds. And we've seen a very sharp fall off. You know, if we're looking at Lloyds over the space of the last 6 months, we saw a very nice steady move to the upside on the anticipation of higher rates from the Bank of England, which of course that we saw that was priced into Lloyds, and we were trading up at around 50p, and that's obviously due to the benefits of higher interest rates on their net interest margins. But of course now the potential of, you know, 4% interest rates put, you know, really send shocks through the UK economy at a time that households are feeling the pressure of a cost of living crisis and you know, broader inflation. So Alan, you know, same question as I asked for Taylor Wimpey, looking at Lloyds around 41p, you know, is it too early to start stepping into the bank?
Well, again, here we are sort of at year lows again, around at 41p. So yeah, it's been hit badly, but you know, we still have to carry on banking. We still have to use you know, bank online and use the services provided. As you say, the X factor in all of this is the mortgage business. But you know, you've got to look at Taylor Wimpey in conjunction with this. You know, the company's still continuing to build houses. Mortgages will be required, and I think what we're seeing at the moment is a short-term knee-jerk reaction to the situation. And what that's doing is creating opportunities to buy blue chip stocks like Taylor Wimpey, like Lloyds, at knockdown prices. And provided, you know, even if you say, as you said with Taylor Wimpey just now, if the dividend is halved, you know, you're still getting income back, and you've got the prospect that if there is a steady improvement or a stabilization, then we'll see an increase in the share price again. So you'll see a capital gain with that too. And I put Lloyds in the same book or in the same boat with Taylor Wimpey. You know, they're both heavily linked to the UK housing market. Lloyds is one of the key lenders. And I think I don't think there's enough anecdotal evidence yet to look at Lloyds and say you should sell out. I think it's still very much in the buy basket for me, along with Taylor Wimpey.
Fantastic. Thank you, Alan. So two stocks that we'll probably be looking at again, and we'll revisit and see where we are definitely before the end of the year on these two companies to see how they've fared. So we're going to move on now and move on to two more equities. First of all, Alan, Belenkau Resources is one that we've discussed on the podcast previously, but I believe they've had a number of updates and there seems to be quite a lot happening there. So what does that look like?
Yeah, Belenkau indeed. They have, so the company over the past few years has, well, initially it RTO'd into Consolidated African Resources at 6p. Has undertaken several fundraises since that point, and of course it's the 100% owner of the Orem Cross graphite project. And when you acquire a mining project like this, you have to go through a series of phases. You sample it, you get on site, you undertake sampling, magnetic surveys, and then you have to obviously start your drilling you're drilling at some point. With the Orion Cross project, it's in Uganda, which is a very benign regime in Africa. But the asset is such that the flake graphite that's contained within the Orion Cross license area literally is sticking out of the ground in some cases. So you could drive a tractor and harrow over, and you can actually pull out a lot of the graphite and stick it straight into a beneficiation plant and actually get the core graphite straight out. That's a bit of a simplification, but the company's gone through a series of phases. Maiden JORC resource last year of 16.3 million tons. Then in September last year, we had a preliminary economic assessment, which established a net present value of $317 million valuation, internal rate return of 49%, and high quality graphite that can be used, of course, in the in EVs and all the rest of it going forward. And that's you know, it's a key part of the new energy or the clean energy and EV economy going forward. Subsequently, we had the pre-feasibility study that increased the net present value again to $482 million. Again, a 14-year life of mine, initial life of mine, and average EBITDA expected to be $100 million over that life, with a free cash return over the initial 14 years of mine life of $1.1 billion. So this is great stuff. But of course, where we are at present, we have the share prices of mining stocks, particularly the junior miners with projects like this, languishing. From the initial RTO price at 6p, Blenko is now getting off of half of that, so trading at 3.5p, which gives the company a market capitalization of just 6.3 million, which is ludicrous in my book, particularly because we have this pre-feasibility study numbers that have been undertaken by independent contractors. We then move on from there, and the company announced at the start of this week that it's now commencing the definitive feasibility study, and it's engaged with graphite engineering company to manage the DFS. And of course, what this does, it's the next phase of development, and this basically looks at the offtake agreements. It looks at how it's going to be funded and the engineering and procurement of the necessary infrastructure to construct the plant. So, you know, this is a huge step forward for the group, we're now moving to a point where in just 2.5 years they've moved from acquiring the project to the DFS phase, which in mining terms is very much a quantum leap. So Cameron Pearce and his team are working hard. Mike Ralston, of course, the chief exec there. This is a 100% owned project, so there are no sort of issues with part ownership. And then if you complete at a certain point, then you'll earn a bit more. This is 100% owned by Blenko Resources. And I think, you know, when you look at what the pre-feasibility study valuation has brought together, we're at DFS point now. So we're really at a pivotal point in terms of valuation where we could start to see that massive valuation gap in the NPV value and the share price start to close. And this is certainly one where you could probably pick up a relatively small amount of stock in a few years' time, be sitting on a decent chunk of money. But that's just my view.
Yes, of course. You know, as you mentioned there, the UK junior miners, you know, they're not for everyone. They're an adventurous sector to be in. But, you know, anybody looking at what's happening with EVs at the moment and the demand for graphite and has, you know, any interest in that, certainly Blenko Resources is one to have a look at there. As you mentioned there, Alan, a market cap of 6 million. You know, if we start to see these assets move through to production, that could quite quickly become dwarfed, especially if you look at, you know, maybe some miners that are listed in Australia or on the TSX. And for some comparisons, you know, certainly Blaine Cowell would look cheap in comparison, but it's all about whether they can get this asset through to production. I'm sure, Alan, one that we'll be updating on the podcast in due course. So the last one we're going to touch on today, Alan, is a new one to the podcast. It's Wallpaint London. So one that listeners may not be familiar with. A very interesting company, actually. It's got a tight trading range. Anybody likes to trade a range, certainly just from looking at the chart, looks interesting. But you're going to provide a bit more, Alan, if you may, fundamental overview of Wallpaint.
Yeah, well, obviously with the discussions today on, you know, on the government budget, the crash of the pound, and you know, the opportunities that's creating in across the blue chip stocks like Lloyds and Taylor Wimpey, I wanted to provide a range of ideas, and of course with Blenkow just now, you know, as we said, you know, that's if that comes to fruition, then it could dwarf the current share price. And of course, all the Rio Tintos and Billitons of this world started somewhere. So they often start with a project and then expand outwards. But Wallpaint is a different ball game altogether. It's very much a defensive stock. As I think the chart shows, you know, that it's a tight trading range. Wallpaint London is a cosmetics company. And if we're looking at defensive items, I think you know, most people using cosmetics, and of course in this day and age we're talking about the fairer sex, we're talking you know, gentlemen that like to wear cosmetics too, and there are a lot of male cosmetics ranges now. Wallpaint London sells under two divisions. It's got its own brand cosmetics under lead brand names W7 and Technic, and of course W7L is the Epic go for Wallpaint, which is worth noting. W7 is sold to UK distributors and to distributors internationally and retail chains. The Technic brands are sold in UK and Europe with a focus on gifting markets in high street retailers and supermarkets such as Asda. That deal was recently announced. And own brand distribution arrangements a white label arrangements, of course, where the cosmetics and packaging are supplied, but then it's branded by the company that buys them. The company acquired a company called Retro in 2017 that has boosted that network of sales. So we've seen good growth from the company over the past few years. September 21st, about a week ago, the company announced record interim sales. Sales up 37% to 25.2 million. UK revenues up 17% to 10.5, and international revenues up 55% to just under 15 million. The margin improved, and that's key when you're looking at retail stocks. The margin was 34.5%, now 39%. Meant the group were able to deliver adjusted EBITDA at 4.4 million, up from 2.1 million last year. The company ended the period with cash in the bank of 4.3 million and pays an interim dividend too. So that's the other thing. It's a 95. So it's almost a micro cap company, a 95 million market cap, and it pays a dividend of nearly 5%. So, you know, that's an important consideration, I think. The company also said that its sales performance is very much second half weighted. And of course, we're coming up to the festive time of year now, so we're going to see more sales. The company also announced in those interims that it's the W7 range of cosmetics have been launched in Boots, and it also had seen a 44% growth in online sales. Of course, that's key for any retailer to have an effective online presence. Chief Executive Sam Benzini said, you know, it's been a great half. We're well capitalized. We've got a healthy balance sheet. And we're seeing already significant opportunities for further growth that are planned and also under discussion with partners going forward. So they are very confident of delivering a solid second half to the year. And if we look where the share price is, you know, so we've seen it trade between 105p and 187p, currently trading at 125p, so closer to those year lows. Also, the chart looks interesting too. We saw two We saw two lows, one in May and one in one at the end of August, and it's now starting to build back off that. So I think this could be a really interesting entry point into a company that's got some great defensive qualities.
Indeed, indeed. I mean, just listening to those numbers there, having a quick look through their recent reports, you know, it's certainly a company, a British enterprise that's on the up. I mean, have they given any indication of where they see the growth going? You know, is this something that is just going to be a UK story, Alan, or you know, is there international presence, or and do you see growth overseas?
So just going back to those numbers, UK revenues are up 70% to 10.5 million. So the sales in total were 25.2 million. UK revenues 10.4 million. International revenues 14.8 million. So they're selling more overseas, and I imagine that the discussions they're having are very much looking towards developing those sales internationally. But of course, remains to be seen. But certainly, Sam Benzini and the team there, got it well under control. Plenty of irons in the fire to grow those numbers in the second half. So I think this could be a really good time. You know, obviously, timing of entry into stocks is all important. But looking at the chart, I think the timing entering now could be really good given the results the company's just announced.
Indeed, indeed. And one that I think we'll be updating on the podcast in due course when we get further figures. It could be interesting to see how those overseas sales do progress. So just as a recap now of the stocks that we discussed today, first of all was Taylor Wimpey with the ticker of TW. It was then Lloyds with the ticker of LLOY. It was then Blencow Resources with the ticker of BRES. And then finally was Warpaint London with a ticker of W7L. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, John.
So just as a note to listeners, we had last night our latest instalment of the UK Investor Magazine virtual conferences, and the videos for those presentations are going to be made available on the UK Investor Magazine website very shortly. There was Vietnam Holding, we had Clean Tech Lithium, and TRX Gold. So do check them out. It's very fascinating insights from those companies and some quite compelling investment cases there. So do check out the video section of the UK Investor Magazine website for those. Thank you very much for listening.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.